Number 26B.
We were considering what has evolution brought forth in the spiritual realm, and we said some very important points that have come now to light, namely that for thousands and thousands of years mankind was seeking the question or the answer for the question, what is God? And that we could see that religion and philosophy has never found an answer to that question, what is God? And that Mrs. Eddy, after thousands of years, was the very first one that gave us an answer to that question and defines God for the first time in human history as the definition of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. That we feel that this is one of the big things that we should contemplate. There is nothing bigger really than the term God, whatever is implied under that term, so that our whole attention really should be centered towards that revelation of that one God and see that we are under grace, that we know about it, whereas another 5.5 billion people do not know it and still are in the dark and never find really their answers, or did not find the answer. Now, with the definition of God, which was the biggest thing that happened since Jesus was here on earth, we have found really a spiritual answer against a corporeal answer like Jesus. Jesus was a corporeal being, and he presented a spiritual principle. But now we do not have to have a corporeal person, but now we have a spiritual principle, and that spiritual principle is explaining us really what being is. So that each one has access to God, each one has access to all the questions that are necessary, and no one is excluded. A second big thing that happened and which we should not forget and should really value as what it is, so we take it usually for granted, is that for time immemorial, the thinkers in religion and in science were trying to find really what are the ontological categories of being. After all, the subject of being is much more important than the subject of physics or biology or of medicine, of any other science, because the science of being touches our being. And that is, so to say, the nearest to our heart. What are we? What is being? And therefore a very practical question. But we never found, or the world never found, really the categories of ontology, the categories of being. Mrs. Eddy found them without perhaps being aware of them. So she said, well, the categories of being rest on the one mind, capital M. So she knew that there were categories, and these categories must rest really on the capitalized term. It must include the capitalized term. It must be defined through the capitalized term. So she, through revelation, as she said, she found step by step the definition of God as she gives it as the world order. Then little by little she gave the Christ order. It took quite a while until she wrote that sixth chapter with the Christ order. And then finally she gave us the Christianity order as another category. And then through John Dorley's vision on scientific touch he had, he could see really that there is a science order which is implied in the world order. So we feel that we are really under grace that we have found for the first time these categories. If you look back, all the great philosophers tried to find them, and especially Leibniz tried to find them, and he couldn't do it. He already had some kind of an idea that if he would find the ontological categories, which he called the root notions of being, that if he would find them, that then he would be able to establish a calculus, that he could then combine these root notions with each other and therefore establish a calculus. This was very near to Leibniz, because you know Leibniz was the one who found really the differential calculus and the infinitesimal calculus, so he was all full of the term calculus and of the meaning of a calculus, so he would have liked also to find the ontological calculus. But he didn't find it, nor did he seem to have had time to do it, nor was the time ripe for this to appear. So we see now that the instruments that are necessary to understand the science of being have been revealed to us through the textbook, that we have now the tools, first really the three categories of being built on the definition of God. So that the calculus which Leibniz was trying to find out was found out by Mrs. Eddy. This is another wonderful revelation that she got, and one doesn't always quite know if she realized the big discovery she made, that she, perhaps she only felt she had made a big discovery because she has the spirit of it, but perhaps not so much the letter explanation. Anyway, there doesn't seem to be any indication that she knew it. There is only an indication that for a long, long, long time she was studying her own textbook, and that she made only a few months before she passed away, made the remark that finally she begins to realize what she has written. That was in the summer of 1910. So how much then she was seeing the scientific tools of her revelation, that is still not quite clear. Just as she herself was not quite clear on which basis the prophets of old have demonstrated the wonders they did, and she asked herself in the textbook that she does not know, or that it is a question if those ancient verses really, who did those miracles, if they really understood the science of the demonstration, or if they had only really the spirit of it, and that the spirit of it was enough to bring forth those demonstrations. So these questions are still in the air and are still not exactly resolved, but that doesn't matter. The main thing is that we know them today, that we are aware of them today. And so that we have seen that that science is really built on the definition of God, on the categories of God, the three big categories on God, and that with these categories, really, she could reduce it to a system. That was then the result of it, that she said, now divine metaphysics is reduced to a system. Now it is reduced to a system that is understandable by the human mind, that can be understood, so that it is not something that is up in the air, but something that we can take in as with our understanding. And it is a system, she says, on which Jesus was demonstrating his works. No matter if he knew it or not, we don't know if John, the gospel writer, knew really these categories. Perhaps he had through his whole life experienced such a spiritualization of thought that he could be used as a transparent window pane through which the system of being itself could shine through, and that he gave the message just out of that wonderful spiritual sense. We don't know if he knew the categories. It could be very possible that he didn't know it, that he was so spiritually minded through the experience he went through, because he was also a martyr. He went through most difficult martyrdom, and yet he survived. And actually, all that is something that spiritualizes thought, and therefore the lack of the letter can no more hinder the spirit to shine through. Not knowing if he knew it or not, we know it today. That's important. He said that the Comforter will come and will teach us all truth. So the Comforter has come as divine science and has shown us that if we take that wonderful grid of the system, of the divine system, and put it over the text of the Bible, that then we can see the structure of it, that then the categories stand out. And so with the diagram, you have a representation of that whole structure of the biblical text, and it is a structure that just shows categories, that does not practically show any more texts, perhaps here and there an epitome, but it shows just the categories of being. So we have had this, we live here in that wonderful age where for the first time since billions of years and since millions of human history and thousands of years of civilization, we can really see that there is a science of spirit and define that science of spirit. All science, she says, is divine. It's a very short sentence of four words and so deep. She knocks down with that sentence the belief that there are many sciences, that there are material sciences, that there are psychological science, biological science, chemical science, etc. That all science is divine. And goes on and says, and human thought never projected. Human thought never projected the least portion of true being. This is saying something. One can actually see that if intelligent people from other disciplines read the textbooks, that they shake their head and say, what is this woman saying? She must be mad. She should really put into an insane asylum. And there she would be the right place to say that human thought never projected the least portion of true being, when we have so wonderful results in the various sciences. This is something, these results. And nobody would like not to have these results. And therefore, how to say that they never really project the least portion of being? Well, meaning that really all the other sciences are sciences about counterfeits of being. Therefore, her demand that the education of the future must be in spiritual science. In spiritual science against what? Against the symbolic counterfeit sciences. So the other sciences are only counterfeits and they are only symbolic. Symbolic means that they are not reality itself, but the symbol only tries to represent reality, but it's never reality itself. So we come to that point and we see little by little the world will have to see that with all those sciences they are never touching being, or that they go further and further away from being and can never really explain what true being is, until then finally their concept of science must fall down, must be broken up. And we live today in a decade or in that second half of the century of this that is really seeing that breaking down of the orthodox or classical concept of science. So today, all these new thinkers say show quite clearly that actually we must have a different definition of science than we used to have up to the middle of this century. That the definition of science must be changed, and must be changed so that it takes in really the concept of man and the meaning of life. Or else this science does not do anything to the most important thing that is necessary, namely to the meaning of life and the meaning of man and what is man. So we can see that we are undergoing not only a terrific change in the world, but also a terrific change in the definition of science. It's quite interesting when one reads when this philosophers of science come together and have a big seminar and so on, how much now they begin to stress that science must be redefined so as to take in really being, so as to take really in the meaning of being, the meaning of life, and must be centered towards the dignity of man. The old sciences never take in the dignity of man. They only analyze matter and analyze what matter is, but not man. They don't know what man is. So we are at the point of a great, great change where we will find that over the next 50 or 100 years, I'm not a prophet, but Mrs. Eddy said it takes a century in order to understand and for the world to accept really divine science. Now, that would mean that we are approaching more and more closer to a spiritual monism of the world. Spiritual monism means that there is only one God, a spiritual God, and only one universe, a spiritual universe. That is the monism, that is the spiritual monism of the world, and that is coming nearer and nearer to the front. Now, the difficulty that they have really is to see that ideas, the building blocks of reality. That's the difficulty. Ideas for them are something that are that is undefined. Ideas are something that is something up on cloud nine, is something that is mystical, something that cannot be defined, something that cannot have form, true form. And therefore, because they don't see the ideas of God as the building blocks of the science of spirit, they have great difficulty in accepting a science of spirit. And this is something that one wonders why that is so important, so difficult, because the whole world accepts that, say, material building blocks are the elements that build up a whole universe, and that one can calculate with those building blocks, one can put them into mathematical formula, and mathematics is again symbolizing, perhaps even clearer than matter, the reality of being. But they are using symbols in order to explain the reality, quite something unique. But in the spiritual universe, why should it be so difficult to accept that ideas are just good elements as matter? That why shouldn't we be able to build really a science that is built on ideas? This is something that still has to break through, and then I think we will find the answers. Now, what we have been doing is really that very thing, that we have taken a symbolic text, a text like the Bible or like the textbook, that is speaking in symbols, and through the symbols we had to arrive at realities, at ideas. Ideas cannot be stated as ideas very easily, and so the Bible tried to state them through symbols. First through crude symbols like trees and rivers and cows and sheep and camels and things like that, history, wars and so on. All these crude symbols were used to define idea. Then in a further epoch, with the introduction of abstract ideas, which we owe perhaps to the Greeks, we began to see that we can symbolize ideas in more abstract terms, like power, like law, like order. These are all abstract terms. But then we must see something that is important, that up to now, mostly, we were thinking about these building blocks as ideas in a very loose way. They were always isolated ideas. There were always isolated ideas, because only now through the categories we could really bring back, reduce ideas into categories and therefore into order. So a lot of ideas we could categorize under mind, a lot of other ideas we could categorize under spirit, and others under soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And in this way, really reduce the infinite of ideas down to some few categories of being. Now, that has been very helpful in defining really, or in helping us to interpret the text, because now we are able to take old symbols, crude symbols, and translate them into abstract symbols. And that's what John Dorley has done right through the Bible, has taken all the biblical symbols and has translated them into abstract ideas, into ideas that are elements in the system of Christian Science. Then we must see that the very first thing we have been doing, or John has been doing, is to see that there are orders in these ideas. That ideas don't just hang around in the empty space, and here is an idea, and there is an idea, and another place is another idea. But these ideas are not isolated things. They are always a field. An idea is a whole field. Just like Sheldrake told it, that we have to reckon in fields, in morphological fields, and that and that if we regard them as fields, we can see that they are everywhere, and that they therefore are blending with all the other ideas, so that one idea cannot stand by itself, but is always blending with other ideas. And so we begin to recognize the divine infinite calculus by blending ideas with ideas. But this is not really the pith of it yet. Then the main thing is that we must see what is really an idea. An idea, we have seen, is not just a single isolated idea, but that Mrs. Eddy says that the rays of infinite truth, when gathered into the focus of idea, bring light instantaneously, where 1,000 years of human conjecture and doctrine do not bring out such an enlightenment. So she is introducing into our concept that an idea is not something isolated, but is always the focal point of many rays of truth. Therefore, is always the focal point of many categories of science. And only if we know the categories of science and blend them and bring them into focus for a specific case, that only then the idea breaks, comes up, the idea is focused and brings light instantaneously. If you take, for instance, the healing that we had of the lame man, you remember that was where in the chart? If you take the chart, you know it where it was. In the chart, that healing took place in the second part under the heading of truth, that there is there a matrix. And in that matrix, it happened exactly at the place where the Christ vertical touches the Christianity horizontal. In that little box there, that empty little box, can you spot it? Where it is? There that healing happened. It was a specific healing. We have seen it was a healing where the man healed himself. It was a healing at the point of Christianity, where man had the Christ in himself. Can you see already that he that idea was only powerful because it was the point of intersection between really Christ as Christianity. So at the focal point, two categories were meeting, but these two categories were under the Christ matrix. And the upper left, you have the Christ, and it's in the Christ matrix. So another category was introduced, or was at work, the category of the Christ translation. See that it translates really evil or disease back into health. But it was not only that category. That whole matrix is under the category of truth in absolute Christian Science. And only because it's under truth, really, it operated as healing. But that truth is already only a category under the second part of the Christ with truth and spirit. So you see, what is that idea that healed the layman? It was not just an idea like a billiard ball, something like that, but it is always the point of intersection of many, many categories. That's the healing. If in our consciousness we entertain really that there is, that there is in the science of the Christ, the calculus at work, the divine calculus, and see that divine calculus can look at from the point of view of truth, the category of truth, and that category of truth has a Christ matrix, namely a matrix how the truth can overcome the human, then you have an idea of the Christ, and within that Christ you have a very specific Christ, namely that Christ which is dwelling within the individual man, and you can only appeal, therefore, to that individual man to take in the Christ, and then you have, through those many, many rays of truth, you have a point of intersection. An idea is always a point of intersection. You see, we consider an idea like a point, something per se. But we know from geometry that a point doesn't exist. There is nothing such a thing as a point. If you have a line is aligning points. But the point itself, you can only define the point in a line when you have another line intersecting that line. Then when two lines intersect, that point of intersection is then really a point. So a point has no space, no time, or anything. It's an intersection of categories. And that is what John is telling us here, or what I tried to show here with that diagram, that everything that happened in that whole story of John, everyone is just an idea that is defined through the intersection of many categories. Can you see it took me a whole week? A whole week to arrive at that point where we can see that an idea is actually the rays of infinite truth gathering together at a certain point of intersection, and if you have taken the right categories and were thinking the right categories, then it found a right point of intersection, and that gives light instantaneously. That's what I wanted to explain for this week. I'm sorry to see that the time is up and that you have to go home. You are wondering really.